18. Jack would later call it the best piece of steak he'd ever eaten. When Erin and her children returned to Gibson Street from their fruitless drive to Tyab, Erin dashed to the toilet. She could have had diarrhea, or she could have just been busting for a pee, but it was a dash to the loo that both kids confirmed. They just went back on their computers. Soon it was tea time. Erin picked up the story in her evidence in chief. "I didn't want to eat anything," she explained to Colin. "I didn't want to cook anything, so I thought I would just give the kids the leftovers that were in the fridge. I had the full Wellington and what was left from my Wellington in the fridge, and I removed the pastry and mushrooms off the meat and put the meat on two plates and put the leftover potato and beans on two plates as well, and I microwaved them." "And did the children eat those?" asked Colin. "Yeah, they did. And I thought I'd chance a little bit of food, and I made myself a bowl of cereal and had a couple of spoonfuls, but it didn't go down too well, so I stopped." "And the rest of the evening, what happened in terms of your symptoms?" "The diarrhea continued. I can't remember the frequency. A little bit off in the tummy, yeah." It sounded as though Erin genuinely could not see why this would strike anyone as strange. Her kids didn't like mushrooms, so she scraped them off and just gave them the meat. It was beautiful beef, I feel it. It had cost her a fortune. What was all the fuss about? Well, if, for the moment, we believed what Erin was wanting us to believe, by the time she was thinking about tea on that Sunday evening, the 30th of July 2023, she knew Don and Gail were in hospital on IV drips with severe gastroenteritis, and she herself had also been suffering from nausea and diarrhea since the night before. And yet she's a loving mother who feeds her kids the leftovers from yesterday's lunch. That sent me cross-eyed. The one thing I cannot believe is that innocent Erin would have done that if she'd had any inkling that the gastro bug she was currently suffering from, the same one that had hospitalised Don and Gail, had come from the lunch she had served the day before. That doesn't just contradict basic parenting, it contradicts human nature, at least as I know it. My reaction to having a bad experience with a particular food or a particular meal from a restaurant is to do anything to avoid a repeat experience. Never order that dish again. Never go back to that place. At the very least, if it's a home-cooked meal and there's anything remaining from that dish, I get rid of it, chuck it out. And that isn't a rationally considered position reached after carefully weighing the evidence. As far as I know, it's a survival trait hardwired into us that operates at a subconscious level. Must avoid that thing or that place. It'll hurt me. I was trying to imagine what would have happened if Erin had thought, "I wonder if it's something in these beef Wellingtons that has made me sick all day and put Donna and Gail in hospital." Can you imagine a mother thinking that, then going ahead and serving her children the leftovers? I can't. For me, it's beyond the "that's a weird thing to do" category. It's flat out against primal human instincts. I simply cannot buy it. Which leaves very few options when it comes to explaining this behaviour. It was true that neither Simon nor Erin had explicitly said that they had discussed, during their call that Sunday, whether the beef Wellingtons were the cause of this outbreak of gastro. It just sounded like it was a given. But maybe it hadn't been a given. I mean, Erin did know that she, Don, and Gail had all been struck down with gastro at roughly the same time, and they had all eaten the same lunch. You didn't need to be Einstein, but if it hadn't been explicitly discussed, it's possible the connection hadn't been made. It's difficult to believe, but let's just say, for the sake of argument, that it hadn't. Well, if it hadn't, then one way of explaining Erin's decision to feed the leftovers to her kids is to say that it genuinely hadn't occurred to her at all that the beef Wellington served at lunch on Saturday might have been responsible for how she'd been feeling for the last 24 hours. Personally, I don't believe that. but I suppose it is theoretically possible. Let's keep an open mind, baby. The only other explanation for this behaviour, however, is that Erin already knew that the spare beef Wellingtons she'd put in the fridge would not hurt her children. She didn't have to think or wonder about it. She knew. It was just a fact. They were safe. And the only person who would have known that was guilty Erin, because she would have known exactly what she'd cooked. She knew what was poisoned and what wasn't. I was beginning to think this was a problem for Erin. I had tried hard to stay legally correct and take the presumed innocent road for as long as I could, but it was getting tough. While Erin went to bed on that Sunday night feeling a little bit off in the tummy, Don, in contrast, was in Dandenong Hospital with metabolic acidosis caused by kidney and liver injuries. He would need hemofiltration, which is essentially just a broad term for filtering the blood, apparently, if he progressed to full kidney failure, which was looking imminent. Simon had travelled with his mum and dad to Dandenong, and his sister Anna was on her way. They didn't yet quite know exactly what was happening, but it didn't look good. Dr. Beth Morgan was now in a three-way conversation with toxicology registrar Dr. Mark Douglas and Dr. Douglas's senior toxicology consultant. On their advice, she had already initiated N-acetylcysteine, widely known as NAC, which is the go-to liver protection drug. She would have to continue repeat blood testing on Don and Gail overnight and would have to call Ian at the hospital where Ian and Heather were under observation. But first, the two toxicologists urgently needed more information on exactly what these patients had eaten for lunch on Saturday and how much. And they wanted to know where the mushrooms in the meal had come from and, critically, whether any of them had been foraged. Erin might have been totally unaware that her Wellingtons were to blame for this crisis, but the doctors at Dandenong Hospital sure weren't. They knew. They also wanted Don transferred to the intensive care unit, now. While he was being transferred, Don told Dr. Morgan what he'd eaten and what Gail had eaten and what Ian and Heather had eaten. He also confirmed that the meal had been cooked by their daughter-in-law, Erin, who had also eaten it. He had no idea where the mushrooms had come from. Dr. Morgan passed that information back to the toxicologists and then called Leongatha Hospital. It was just after midnight. The nursing coordinator at Leongatha confirmed that, at present, Ian and Heather were stable and their last round of tests had all produced results within normal limits. But neither of them could keep down even a glass of water, and they were vomiting or opening their bowels every hour or two. Dr. Morgan advised the nursing coordinator to repeat the venous blood gas test as soon as possible to monitor for any change in their lactate levels. And when was the on-call doctor, Chris Webster, coming back into Leongatha Hospital? 7 o'clock was the answer. Gail and Don were now in separate wards at Dandenong. When Anna arrived, Dr. Morgan informed Simon and Anna that she and her colleagues suspected the cause of their parents' illness was mushroom poisoning. With Anna there, Simon went home for some much-needed rest. It had been a big day. Anna stayed throughout the evening, mostly with her mum, helping her to and from the toilet several times during the night. She asked her mother what had happened at lunch with Erin. Gail told her that Erin had wanted to talk to them about a medical issue, but Gail didn't want to go into any further details. At 2 a.m., Dr. Morgan did further tests on Gail, which showed that her liver function was deteriorating. In response, she began administering NAC to Gail, but retesting at 6 a.m. revealed Gail's condition was only worsening. By now, the toxicology team at Dandenong was trying to source silibinin, which is a specific antidote for the Ammonita phalloides, death cap toxin. But Monash Health, the area health service administering Dandenong Hospital, had only a small supply of it, not even enough for one adult, let alone four. While other supplies were being desperately sourced from elsewhere in Victoria, the next best thing they could use for death cat poisoning was an antibiotic called rifampicin. Dr. Morgan immediately started Gail on a course of that. By the time the clock ticked over to 7 a.m, Gail was on her way to the ICU. Dr. Morgan wasted no time calling Dr. Chris Webster at Leongatha. She quickly told him that Don and Gail both now had grossly abnormal liver functions and, although it still had to be clinically proven, the Dandenong toxicology team was sure the culprit was death cat mushrooms. She also told him there had been 5 people at the lunch, the 4 they knew about who were already in hospital, and a woman called Erin Patterson, who'd cooked the meal and had apparently, yesterday, also been displaying symptoms. Someone needed to get onto her too, and fast. Her life was in grave danger. Beth passed on the recommended treatment regime. Both Ian and Heather needed to be given intravenous rifampicin and NAC as soon as possible and to be transferred to Dandenong Hospital. Chris swung into action, but Leongatha Hospital is so small that they didn't have rifampicin, let alone silibinin. According to the toxicology guidelines, the next best antibiotic was benzyl penicillin, so Ian and Heather were temporarily started on that, and NAC, while Chris organised their discharge from the general ward to the urgent care ward in preparation for their transfer to Dandenong. The medical staff all now knew the seriousness of this situation. Death cap toxins could kill people in a few days unless aggressive medical intervention happened without delay. Chris was supervising Ian and Heather's admission to the urgent care ward when the bell on the triage desk in the waiting room started ringing. The fact that the bell had been pressed indicated that duty nurse Kylie Ashton wasn't at the triage desk. She wasn't. She was busy tending to Ian and Heather. But the bell wouldn't stop until someone answered it, and because Chris was the nearest person, he ducked out from the ward to the waiting room and quickly apologised to the woman sitting there. He was so sorry she'd been kept waiting. They had a couple of unwell patients who were tying up a lot of resources. What was the problem? "I've got gastro," said the woman. "Oh, what's your name?" asked Chris. "Erin Patterson," she said. Oh my God, you wouldn't read about it. Erin, according to Erin, had continued to have bouts of diarrhoea all during the previous night. Poor diddums. "I think it was around 5:30 or 6 that I gave up on getting any sleep and got up for the final time. I got the kids' school bags ready. I made their lunches and then got them up." That was Erin's memory of what had happened on the morning of Monday the 31st of July when she was in court giving evidence. She still wanted us to believe that she'd eaten the same meal as her 4 lunch guests, even though, caveat, she'd only eaten half of it. She also wanted us to believe that she must have had a little bit of it when she tasted the mushroom mixture back at 9 a.m. on Saturday morning. Meanwhile, Gail, who'd also only had half of her Wellington, at most, was in intensive care with a failing liver and being pumped with every relevant drug available, at the same time as Erin was getting her kids' lunches together. And for the fashionistas out there, when she got dressed that morning, Erin had chosen to wear white pants. Again, just saying. She dropped the kids at the school bus stop at about 7:20 a.m. The kids, by the way, were fine. They had no ill effects from the previous night's Wellington leftovers whatsoever. Like, they were great. But if they had eaten the beef Wellington leftovers without any problem, why was Erin still having diarrhoea? Did she ever wonder what might have caused her to have diarrhoea? Did she ever think the problem might have been the pastry or the mushrooms that the kids didn't eat? Apparently not. She didn't wonder anything at all. "I had a bit of gastro," she was declaring. She wasn't sure why. She didn't think back over what she'd eaten to try to work it out. In her evidence in chief, Erin never mentioned what food she thought, at the time, might have given her the runs for more than 2 days, didn't even ask the question. Except her entire defence revolved around her insistence that she had eaten exactly the same lunch as her four guests, all of whom were now in hospital, and two of whom were in intensive care. Sticking with Team Erin was getting harder. Anyway, after dropping the kids at the bus stop, Erin called Simon. She called Simon? I know, that was my first reaction too. But okay, fair enough. She knew Don and Gail had been hospitalised. He told her that yesterday. Obviously, she would have been very worried about them because she loved them and they loved her. She'd built a shrine to them and she would have wondered how they were doing. She would have been very concerned. And Ian and Heather? She'd want to know if they were okay too. Saturday had been the first time she'd ever asked them over to lunch. If they'd got sick as well, it would just be so terrible. Golly, were they okay? But no, that wasn't why she called Simon. None of those questions were asked. They didn't even cross her mind. So why had she called Simon? Take it away, Erin. I thought that perhaps I needed to go to hospital to get some fluids. The diarrhea didn't seem to be resolving, and every time I drank water, it went straight through me. I couldn't seem to retain it, so I thought that perhaps I should go in for a little bit. In the courtroom 2 years after the events in question, Colin nodded understandingly. And what did you expect would happen when you got to the hospital? I thought they'd just give me some fluids, you know, like saline, something like that. Maybe they had something stronger than Imodium that would stop what was going on? So getting back to the question, said Colin, massaging the whole exchange, why did you call Simon? I wanted company when I went to hospital. I didn't want to go by myself. That was her answer. I kid you not. Sometimes there's nothing to say. I had nothing. I was just staring at her, thinking, if you were suffering from anything at all, it was an upset tummy. What are you talking about? And what did Simon say? Asked Colin. He said that he was tired and still in bed and I should drive myself. Simon's version of this conversation was a little longer, but it ended up in the same place. Erin had wanted him to help her get to hospital, and he had said no. Get there yourself. Crucially, there was no mention in that conversation of what Simon now knew was the cause of his parents' illness. Erin described her call to Simon in a tone that suggested we should put an arm around her shoulders and kick Simon in the balls, but it didn't land that way at all. Most people in the courtroom could see Simon's point on this one. Still, that was the sequence of events that ended up with Erin getting herself to Leangatha Hospital at around 8:05 a.m. on the morning of Monday, the 31st of July, 2023. What was she really thinking? Well, we'll never know. If she was innocent Erin, who the day before had blithely fed her kids the leftovers from lunch, then she apparently had still not thought about what had caused her and Don and Gail to be sick, nor had she asked Simon or herself any questions that might help her solve that puzzle. She'd been well enough to drive to Tyab and back the previous afternoon, and then get up in the morning and organise the kids' lunches and get them to the bus stop. Why she would then think she needed hospital attention isn't entirely obvious, despite what she said. If she was guilty, Erin, however, at this point in time, she would have still thought that everyone believed Don and Gail just had a bad case of gastro. If she wanted to keep up the appearance of having had exactly the same lunch as them, she probably thought that she should make a bit of a show, just so there would be something on record saying she'd also been affected. But this was the moment, at a little after 8 a.m. on Monday morning, that it all started to go a bit haywire. Dr. Chris Webster, on hearing this was Erin Patterson, went hard at the ball, She had been the fifth person at the lunch, and she'd just turned up here, at his hospital, just in the nick of time, thank Christ. He wasted no time telling her that there was a very grave concern that the lunch she'd served on Saturday afternoon had contained deathcap mushrooms. From where had she got the mushrooms she'd put in the beef Wellington? Woolworths, said Erin. That was all she said, a one-word answer. Both Erin and Chris agreed that this was all she said at this point, and I don't doubt it. I'd say she was stunned. Whether she was innocent Erin or guilty Erin, being told that her lunch had contained deathcap mushrooms would have been cataclysmic. Innocent Erin would have thought, oh fuck, what have I done? And guilty Erin would have thought, Christ, they know that already? Either way, it was panic. Chris bowled straight on. For Erin's own safety, they didn't have a second to lose. They would need access to her vein for emergency IV treatment for suspected deathcap mushroom poisoning. It was a life-threatening situation. As Chris was explaining this, Nurse Kylie Ashton returned to the triage desk and Chris delegated the care of Erin to Kylie. Kylie's job was to officially admit Erin and carry out all the standard assessments before initiating IV antibiotics, and then to transfer her to Dandenong Hospital as soon as possible. Feeling immensely relieved that they had Erin in care and that Kylie Ashton was in control, Chris went straight back to Ian and Heather. So far, so good. All Kylie had to do now was to escort Erin from her seat in the waiting room through to the unit to begin all the usual assessments prior to receiving treatment. That should have been the easy bit. Instead, it proved impossible. And for us on the jury, us country bumpkins who'd been trying to figure out the whole multidimensional jigsaw of what was really going on and who was thinking what, the scene that unfolded in the next few minutes between Kylie Ashton and Erin Patterson would be unforgettable.